This piece was brought to you by the International Culinary Center, culinarycenter.com. HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Business.
My family always had a big pile of compost in our backyard while I was growing up. We had a bucket under the sink that we would fill with fruit and vegetable scraps. We used an old Frisbee as a lid. There was only one rule pounded into my head by my mom. No meat. She even made me rinse out the eggshells before I put them in the bucket. In my backyard, compost was food waste material like banana peels and onion skins that sat in a pile and broke down into something that looked like soil. It had worms in it, and we helped the worms break it down by turning it a few times a week. The final product was like a fertilizer, and our plants went crazy for it. The college I went to in California composted in their dining hall, and they followed my mom's rule as well. No animal protein. When I moved to New York, the composting rule was the same at their farmers markets. In my own backyard, I also made sure I kept meat out of the compost. For my whole life, I have lived by this rule. My understanding of compost was shattered a few weeks ago at a butchering event I attended to get more background for this story. A whole lamb was being cut apart to show us how to maximize the cuts. The person standing next to me was a butcher, and he told me he composts his meat scraps. No way, I thought. How? I asked. I was imagining a disgusting pile of rotting meat. He didn't know. He just had someone pick it up. So I had to find out myself. I called Jean Bonholt of Cornell Waste Management Institute.
We tend not to compost meat in a home-scale compost. So in your backyard, your compost pile is pretty small. And because it's pretty small, it doesn't get hot like a compost pile should.
It turns out that in order to compost meat, the pile needs to heat up to 120 to 160 degrees Fahrenheit. Smaller compost piles never reach that temperature, so the meat can't break down.
We dig in compost piles to take samples, and you actually can burn your skin. If you dig far enough into a compost pile, put your hand in 140 degree water, you'll come out with a burn.
Some compost piles get so hot, they'll even catch on fire.
Spontaneous combustion. If your moisture and carbon and nitrogen are balanced, then you won't catch on fire, but it can dry out to the point where it could catch on fire.
But Jean says that rarely happens with meat waste because the nitrogen meat part of the compost pile is wet enough to prevent it. Compost piles for animal protein are made with both carbon and nitrogen. Although everything has carbon and nitrogen, even you and I, some things have more carbon and more nitrogen than others.
Carbon tends to be a drier, woodier type material, and nitrogen tends to be a wetter. And it could be a lot of different things. It could be a watermelon, it could be a cow, it could be food scraps.
Compost piles for animal protein have to be more planned out than your backyard compost. Farmers lay down 24 inches of chunky carbon material like wood chips or dry corn cobs, then put animal waste on top. Then they cover it with another 24 inches of carbon material. A compost pile for meat waste should be 5 to 8 feet tall and 8 to 12 feet wide. It's as long as you need it to be.
Because we have those chunky materials, chunky wood chips, air can get into that pile naturally, and that pile will naturally aerate. And what happens in a compost pile is the microbes actually digest the material that's in there.
Animal protein compost is so hot that worms don't like to live in it, so the decomposition is done by microorganisms. They create lots of heat.
Think about putting 50 fifth graders in a room, and they're all running around. They're going to be sweating, and they're going to be giving off heat. We don't need to heat that room. The same thing is happening with the microorganisms. They're much smaller than we are, but they're all, in essence, running around and producing heat. And they give that heat off, and that heat is insulated into that pile, and they keep making that heat. So they keep generating that heat.
Another difference between your backyard compost and these piles of compost are that you don't have to turn them.
Because if we turned the meat waste composting, we would liberate some pretty nasty odors. You know, if you've ever smelled anything that's dead, that's what it would smell like. Dead and rotting, I should say.
After 3 or 4 months, the meat waste is entirely decomposed. This process works for even entire animals, like a whole cow or pig. Farm mortalities are another waste byproduct of the meat industry. Jean says that for every 1,000 cows that are raised for meat, about 40 of them will die naturally in a year. Because farmers have to pay the renters per pound to haul away the meat waste, it is much cheaper for them to compost a 1,500-pound steer carcass. The process for composting meat is different from composting vegetables, and so is the result. The primary purpose of composting animal proteins is to dispose of the animal. In fact,
any animal compost, we would encourage people to use it in low public contact areas. We don't want to necessarily put it on the carrots and potatoes that we're growing. So a low public contact area for roadkill compost would be the side of the highway. We can grow grass there, and nobody's going to be playing in that dirt, in that soil.
Keeping the compost in low public contact areas is just a precaution for something they aren't sure is dangerous. Gene says that they have done lots of research to see if compost from animal proteins is hazardous, but they have not found anything yet. Now I knew that meat composting wasn't another Santa Claus or Tooth Fairy that I was finding out about too late. But I also wanted to know how meat composting could be a reality for someone who doesn't have the space to do it themselves. I went to Gramercy Tavern in Manhattan's Flatiron District to find out. Executive Chef Mike Anthony says the decision to compost their meat came from a completely new way of thinking about their meat program.
Well, before I got here, there wasn't really a whole animal program, so there was less waste. You know, you open the bag, you trim off some of the meat, it was thrown in the garbage, and cut it into portions, and you cook it, and that was it. You know, there wasn't really any real butchery involved. And in the process of setting up a new sustainable meat program, composting was just an inevitable part of buying whole sides of beef.
In rethinking their meat program, Mike wanted a story to tell. Customers wanted to know where their meat came from and how the animal lived. Composting their meat was a way for Gramercy Tavern to complete the circle and have an end to that story.
What you can do is practice our business fully, meaning thinking carefully about the inputs to our business and the outputs of our business. And if we're really thinking about what comes in and what goes out, then I think we're just running a better business. And isn't that what every restaurant should strive for?
But even though composting is a great way to take care of the scraps we cannot use, Mike would rather use all the parts of the animal possible on their menu. He took me through Gramercy Tavern's kitchen and downstairs to their prep room to show me how they do this. Their butcher, Ramon, was preparing duck legs to be sent to the kitchen.
What we're looking at are the inside of these duck bones that he's removing and being sure that what's left on that bone is a bare minimum and what's left on that piece is a maximum. That's where the profit of the restaurant is. When bones have red bits and pieces left on them, that's the profit going out the window.
A few feet away, their charcuterie chef, Jaywon, was butchering a pig head. He starts with a head of about 17 pounds and will use everything except the bones, eyeballs, and glands. Only about a pound will be left to be composted.
The time-consuming work gets transferred from the butcher to the charcuterie chef, where he's pulling out the tongue and cheeks, and then he'll utilize the whole head to make head cheese. There's the jowls, where he'll make guanciale by salting those, and full utilization. So even the head will go into the stock that's being used for the head cheese, and then once it's finished, it'll find its way into the compost bin.
Mike even lets me peek into their compost bin.
This is the bin that we use to bring the compostable material upstairs. You can see at this point in the day, there are duck heads, some large bones that didn't go into stock. This is some miscellaneous breadcrumbs mixed in with some vegetable scraps. And then there's the silver skin that we were talking about. This is carrot that went through the grinder in order to juice carrots.
The compost bin looked like a full-size garbage bin on wheels, like you have in your garage and leave on the curb every week. They fill about two or three of these every day with compost scraps, and Mike estimates that about a third of those are meat waste scraps. Their compost has to be picked up every night by a company that specializes in meat waste because they produce so much. Mike says it's about 1,000 pounds worth of compostable material every day. That's 1,000 pounds less than our landfills daily. Gramercy Tavern has a contract with the waste collection service, and the restaurant pays for every pound of material that is taken away to compost. For now, the restaurant does it as part of their holistic vision of what they want their food to be.
If you look around our restaurant, there's no blackboard with all the list of farms that we buy from. There is no sign that says we compost here. There's no overt way of standing on a soapbox and telling everyone that they should like the food because of what we do behind the scenes.
Although meat can be composted, it is something that is not commonly practiced because to do it, you need a lot of compostable material and a lot of space. The other option to get rid of material like tendons, silver skins, and bones is through rendering. Renderers call themselves the original recyclers. They take any parts of the animal we don't eat, including whole animals, and boil them down into ingredients for new products. Our next piece will explore the role of renderers in more depth. This is a third piece in a continuing series on animal meat waste. To learn more, visit our website at heritageradionetwork.org. For Heritage Radio, I'm Caitlin Pierce.
Heritage Radio Network is a member-supported nonprofit organization broadcasting over 30 live shows a week. To learn more and donate, visit our website or connect with us on iTunes, Stitcher, Facebook, Twitter, Tumblr, and Instagram for more. Thanks for listening.